快。
Yes, sir. It's good to see quite a few people here. I know, well, I'm not sure about last week, but the week before we're a little slim. Had all the kids headed to Camp Blue Haven. Got to see them last weekend for brief stints, most of them. I hope that was, y'all had a good session. I imagine, I didn't ask him, I probably should have. I imagine Bonnie did the book last week. Perfect. So for those of you who were here last week, Bonnie would have went over the lesson 92, which is Elijah stands up for God. We have this big story that most people know of the prophets of Baal and Elijah challenging them in the name of God. So they go down and they set up these altars, and Elijah starts mocking Baal and the prophets, and so they're all standing around chanting, and he starts mocking them. And then Elijah's turn comes up, and nothing's happened from Baal. And he soaks it in water, the altar of water. God sends a big fire down, and the people of Israel turn their backs on Baal, start following God again, and slaughter all the prophets of Baal. And so we have this big, powerful story that most of us look upon, and it's just this show of God's power. And we sometimes that can get us fired up, right? And so I think you see that from the Israelite people, not to step on Bonnie's toes. I'm just rehashing, and we'll get on to everything else. You have this big display, and you watch God's people turn back to him. And we've been talking about this a lot. It's just over and over and over again, this cycle of God's people turning their backs on him and then God's people being brought back to him. We see it throughout the Exodus story when they flee and God's people start to turn on Moses, and then God opens the Red Sea, and then they cross it, and then God's people are back on fire. And then the very next scene you have them complaining about, where are we going to get food? Where are we going to get water? And then God works through miracles and gives them water, gives them food, gives them manna. And then they kind of go back. And then all of a sudden, well, now they're sad because they don't get meat. And we just have this super repetitive cycle of God's people falling away. And then I think probably amongst our own lives, amongst our own stories, we can see that cycle in our own lives. Where you're in these troughs and you're in this rut and you've got things going poorly. And then God brings us out of it. And you tend to give glory to God. And then all of a sudden, you start to get a little bit comfortable. All of a sudden, you start to do this a little bit more. We see that in Solomon's story where he's got this big kingdom and people are praising him, coming all over the place to come see him. And it gets easy sometimes when things are going right to stop giving credit to God. Through the last story, you see this big display of power and then God's people turn back to God. And I think that is a sad but true story of what happens. Is it takes, we just ask. How many of us just ask for, hey, well, God, if you do this, then who makes deals, right? And ask, right? My favorite story right now is reading this about my mother, is when they were selling their house. And she made a deal with God, and God followed through, and I think that was really hard for her. But we tend to do that, right? Lord, just give me a sign. Lord, show me this. Lord, show me that. And then, hey, we're right back. And then, over some stint of time, we're back in the same spot. Ask him for a deal. Lord, show me this. Lord, show me that. Lord, do this. Lord, do that. And I think that's indicative of the whole biblical story of probably a lot of our walk in life. So we get this high of highs, right? God's display of power shown through Elijah. And what happens? Elijah gets red hot. And we're going to be in 1 Kings 19. I'm going to do some reading. This section goes over a whole lot. I'm not going to be able to get through all of it. I'm just going to focus on this for most of our lesson today. And if y'all would, and if y'all are here frequently and want to dive into it, this is a powerful story. But right after we have this big miracle worked by God, then what happens? And I don't know if Monty got to this part, but you have all the prophets of Baal are slaughtered. God's people are turning back towards God. You have this huge display of power. And what's been happening in the land? A huge drought. We have a lot of ranchers. Who's been liking the weather lately? Who's been wishing for some rain? Imagine doing that for a long, long time. And finally, when God's people turn back to Him, the Lord sends rain. And so it rains, and we've got this just amazing display. God taking His people back. And I think that's often overlooked sometimes too, is the fact that God keeps taking His people back. Wow. You've turned away from me, you're worshiping your false gods, and over and over again, God takes His people back. Then God sends rain, and then in 1 Kings 19, if you read the little subtitle, it says, Elijah flees Jezebel. Hopefully in our heads we're going, what happened? Right? If you read that header and you're thinking we just had this amazing display, Elijah's on fire, they've turned everything, they've righted the ship, and then God sends rain and this should be just a major triumph, but what's happening right now? Elijah flees Jezebel. That should be sending off little alarm bells in our head. I'm going to go ahead and read this section. Ahab told Jezebel all that Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. Then he was afraid, and he arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. Again, I love repetition in the Bible. This is starting to sound like a whole lot of people that we read about in the Bible. Probably the first one that clicks in your head is Pharaoh, right? You come face to face with the power of God, all these miracles take place, and what's Jezebel's reaction? She didn't turn her back on Baal like the people of Israel. Again, she is the queen of God's people. What does she do? She's angry. She sends to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and more also. If I don't take your life by the end of the day tomorrow, then may the gods give to her gods take my life. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, it is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my father's. And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stone. acting on God's behalf. Amazing display. He lights this altar on fire that's been soaked in water. And fire comes down from the heavens and lights it on fire. And that creates this riot in God's people. And then everything's going right. And the next scene you have of Elijah is what? Lord, take my life. The immediate high to the immediate low, he gets this threat from Jezebel, who Elijah's just witnessed. God make a mockery of the God she worships. And she sends him a messenger saying that, hey, I'm out for your life because of what you did to my prophets. And he flees to the wilderness and says, Lord, take my life. He's got this amazing, on fire. And then sometimes we just hit that bump in the road and guess what we do? We're like, yeah, enough's enough. Let's call it quits. And God sends an angel to feed him, to strengthen him. He says the journey is long before you. We'll come back to that. There he came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passes by, and a great strong wind tore the mountain and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. So God comes to, and again, this is Mount of the Lord, Mount Sinai. This is where Moses talked to him. This is where we have all these events unfold. And he gets called to this place, and God says, hey, on this mountain, I'm going to come to you. And Elijah's probably reflecting on all the stuff that he knows. And what we have is, I'm going to take an interesting caveat, because I challenged a guy at work to read some stuff. He challenged me to read some stuff. And so what I read is Holy, Holy, Holy by R.C. Sproul. And we have this. I like how he puts it in his book. Is he uses this example of Christ on the boat. And there's these huge waves crashing. And the storm is raging all around him. And they come down to Jesus and say, hey, don't you care? Don't you care that we're all about to die? What does Christ do? He speaks and the waters calm. He gets up and calms the storm. And what was the reaction of the disciples? Was it peace? Was it comfort? No. More fear than they had of the storm. Because they just came face to face with God and what happens when He talks. The scariest things imaginable, being caught on a little boat in the middle of a storm and all the elements and fire and wind and all this stuff. The scariest things that we can think of, tornadoes, all these natural disasters. My brother's house just got beat in by golf ball sized hail. And what's there? I asked him, like, what's going through your head? He's like, scared. He had all of his, what are they called? Skylights. All of his skylights shattered by the hail in Lubbock, Texas. And tornadoes right near him. And he said, just the noise. And you hear stuff getting shattered in your living room. And what's going through his head is fear. And we're worshiping the God. guy that can speak and all that calms. And guess what? They were after scared. Why? Because the scariest thing imaginable, this guy controls. Oh, the power in that. And Elijah's about to go through the same experience. God said he could go out and stand by the mountain before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces and the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. This wind is breaking trees and rocks, and it's shattering. It's shaking the world around them. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. God's making all these things pass before Elijah right now. This is my favorite part. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenants, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away." And the Lord said to him, "Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria." I don't know if that's ringing any bells, but I had to do a lot of research. I'm like, why is God anointing somebody to the king of Syria? Why is one of God's prophets anointing a king of Syria? And what we'll learn later, and I'm not sure if I'll get time to go through this, but what we'll learn later is that there was immense respect for Elijah, not just amongst Israel, but the king of Syria, who kind of has their thumb on the Israelites. Elijah is known in all the lands. Why? For the glory of God. "Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu the son of Nimshi you shall anoint to be king over Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphat, and Abel-Meholah you shall anoint to be prophet in your place, and the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death, and the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." So God's prophecy is going to be fulfilled in the next several chapters. But what happens is Elijah follows the call of God. So he departed from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him, and he was in the 12th. Elijah passed by him and cast his cloak upon him, and he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you." And he said to him, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" And he returned from following him, took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them, and boiled their flesh with the yokes of oxen and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and went after Elijah and assisted him. So he makes the first call. And we have Ahab's wars with Syria. So God gives Ben-Hadad into the hand of Ahab. And God commands him to take the lives of all those. It's another one of those stories that we have struggles with, where you in our minds, and what we like to focus on, and what most of the people pay attention on, is his mercy, his grace. And we come across these stories where we have just this, God's command is to take out whole groups of people, leave no survivors. We have another one of those stories, but instead of listening to God, Ahab decides to make a deal with Ben-Hadad. So they go down this deal, and then we have just some, I mean, this story already sounds familiar, right? We read stories like this over and over in the repetition. But I want to go back to what we were talking about, now that we have kind of this whole picture of how this thing starts, and with Monty's lesson last week, and we have put it all together. And I want us to focus on a few things that I hope stand out throughout Elijah's walk. As he comes off this high of highs, and I'm sure the fellows that were just at camp are probably on this high, right? You just spent 2 weeks without your cell phone, without anything going on, except for hopefully walking in step and pursuing relationship with God. When you do that, you come out pretty fired up. So I imagine that's this place you're on. And how fast does that often get kicked off, right? Everybody there at Blue Haven talks about crossing the bridge. This is how it's going to be when you cross the bridge. This X, Y, Z. And everybody wants to stay in this little bubble. And what happened to Elijah's bubble is it just got popped. He's parading in, and Ahab tells his wife Jezebel, and there's more, and your book talks about that. And I don't feel like I'm going to have time to get into it. But we just talked about Solomon and how his wives kind of turned him away from God. Now we're talking about Ahab, appointed king of God's people, married Jezebel. Everybody's probably heard the don't be a Jezebel, or you're just a Jezebel, right? I hope not, because that's a, you read it, that is a terrible thing to say about somebody. But he pulls, she has so much pull, and the one thing that I did appreciate that your book talked about, is it talks about her using her husband's authority and her husband's seal, and she acts, and what does Ahab do? Just sits idly by. He comes to her with these reports of what Elijah's just done. And he lets her reaction stand. And then this also goes into, and we're going to paint a very brief picture of Jezebel. But Ahab wants to do some trading for a vineyard of something that was next to his place. And he offers the guy, he says, hey, I'll give you a much greater vineyard. I just want this one because it's by where I'm at, right? And the guy says, no, I'm not going to trade my father's inheritance. And what does Jezebel do? Oh, I'll take care of that. So she hires two false witnesses to speak against the guy who owns the vineyard, and they put him to death. They take him outside the city gate and stone him. That gives the ability for Ahab to go in and claim these lands. But she's painted as this gruesome, almost Viking-like, right? She sees it and she takes it. We've talked about that a lot. In the garden, when it says the fruit was pleasing to the eye, it's pleasing to the sight. What do? They take it. She's the definition. She's placed the serpent role in this narrative. Is she sees, she takes. She sees her husband wants something, she takes it. She's not going to let anything stand in the way of what she sees is good and pleasing to the eye. She's going to get it. And the husband probably he grew up with these stories, right? He grew up knowing God, raised amongst God's people, appointed to be king over God's people. So he knows. But he probably lets his wife stand on this to try and play, oh, well, it was my wife, Lord. What are you going to do about it? Trying to take this kind of back seat, but probably enjoying her actions, because the human tendency is you get this greed and you see something and you want it, and when it's taken for you, you can kind of be like, well, my wife did that, but what am I going to do now, right? Probably kind of enjoying that, thinking he's got this best of both worlds situation. Where his wife's just coming down like the axe. And he enjoys the earthly fruits of that. And there's a lot to talk about that, but we're going to move on. But this Jezebel character is there's a reason that, I don't want to take away from that. There's a reason Elijah's worried right now. It's not for no good cause. This woman is presented herself as the kingpin in this case. What she says sticks. When her husband comes to her with this report of everything that's just happened, her anger passes. Her desire for revenge is what's going to be upheld. And so Elijah hears that. And she's even so confident that she's going to send him a warning. Right? It's not just this shade, middle of the night kind of deal. She sends somebody to him and says, hey, I'm going for your life. So his actions aren't unquestioned, but that's what happens in our day-to-day life is oftentimes we talk about these people. David was the perfect example where who would have blamed David for killing Saul? Nobody. Two times God put Saul in the right position for David to take his life. And David's actions, reaction was, who am I to lift a hand against God's appointment? I'm going to let God's time play out. And David's army, his soldiers are sitting there saying, David just... nobody would blame you. Just kill him. Saul walks into a cave and David cuts off a corner of his robe and everybody's like, well, you just let him go. And then shortly after that, David's pursuing him with an army. And David sneaks into camp. And what does he tell his official? No, don't take his life. He says, let me pin him to the earth with my spear, David. And he says, no, don't take his life. Instead, he wakes up and he points to the guy that should have been protecting Saul and says, what are you doing? You could have just let your king die. Perfect example of what we're talking about in the patience, letting God's timing play out. And in this scenario, we have Elijah running from him. Running from Jezebel. And we see him have to be coached back out. We have this, just what we see over and over again. God pulls somebody back out of that. Says, hey, be my vessel. Hey, work for me. I love hearing this, and it's not an excuse, it's not anything, but the guy at the office that we get into a lot of theological talks. One thing that he says, and I love how he says it, is he says, I love knowing that God does not need me to carry through with his plan, but he gave me the opportunity to be a part. I hope we can all replay that over and over in our heads. Because there's, and everything's this delicate balance. You're sitting on a razor's edge right there. And that's the best way to put it, of not the prideful of, hey, God needs me. Has anybody ever told us, hey, well, I need to do this. God needs me for it. No. God's plan is going to be played out no matter what you do. But we are blessed to have the opportunity to play our role in that plan. So it coaxes Elijah back out of this cave. And instead of just kind of talking to him and sending him bread and water and kind of pulling him out, what does he allow him to do? Takes him up on Mount Sinai. Shows him the amazing power of God yet again. He just witnessed fire come from the heavens and light this soaking wet altar on fire. But he sends a terrible wind, an earthquake, and fire, and then he speaks in but a whisper. Showing him again that there is one God who has power over everything. So when God speaks to him and calls him to do this thing, God reassures and comforts him that, hey, your fear, I get it. She's a wicked woman pursuing your life. But don't forget who you serve. Don't forget that guy. Because no matter what ill intent Jezebel has for you, my plan is going to come through. Man, that should bring an immense amount of peace in our lives. No matter what, all these people on the outside, no matter what happens between America, Iran, Israel, all the stuff that we like to freak ourselves out about, no matter what ill intent is had for this country or you as an individual or whatever the case may be, guess whose plans can we have an amazing opportunity to get to play a role in that plan. And you see that. It's not just something that is overly exalted or talked about. But we see it through Elijah's reaction. Yeah, he has to be reminded. God comes down and puts on just another amazing display of power. Yeah, he has to be kind of coaxed along. But God's about to ask him to walk right back into the lion's den. And what does he do? He does it. Oh. Stop talking because I only have a few minutes left. And I know that was a lot to go over. There might be comments, questions, things that stuck out to you, things that I missed. If you have them, now's the time while Asher gives us our first buzz. Anything? Sometimes when there's nothing, I like to give myself and say, hey, that was a good one. I must have been really thorough today.